Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Glad that you're here. If you're a guest, my name's Trey Kelly. I'm the lead pastor here. And as you heard in the welcome, we're in the middle of a series that I love. We do it every year. It's one of my favorite 3 weeks of the year. We call it Love MB. And this is week two. So if you missed last week and you're new to our church, man, I'm going to highly encourage you, if you don't have it already, download our app. Number one, it's just a great way to stay connected with us. And also, you can go back and you can watch previous weeks of the series. You can go back and you can watch week one of this series. You can go back and watch the amazing series April just finished called Aftermath. That was just phenomenal. It's just a great way to stay connected. So if you are new, let me kind of bring you up to speed real quick on what we're talking about and why we spend a few weeks every single year talking about Love MB. So the question we answered last week is, what is Love MB? Why do we talk about this? And here's the very long, wordy answer. Well, it's Wellspring's initiative to resource nonprofits in our community that are making Horry County a better place. That's practically what we do. Put a little more poetically, Love MB is Wellspring's attempt at changing the world. Because what we do is we go into our community, we find great nonprofits that are making a difference, that are changing the world, and we ask them a very simple question. We say, hey guys, how can we help? How can we partner with you and help further what it is you're doing in our community? And as we talked about last week, they always give us two answers, and it's in this order, money and volunteers. We need money, and we need people to help us. And so for us, Love and Be has become pretty specific to our church. So for what is Love and Be? Number one, every year we give. We take a yearly offering. We were going to do that. We did it last week. We're doing it this week and next week. At the end of our service, we'll take a special offering for Love MB. And 100% of what's given to that offering goes out the door. It goes out the door in the form of direct donations to organizations. It goes out the door in forms of funding, whatever it is they ask us to do in terms of volunteer work and gifts we give. What you give goes out the door into our community to love Myrtle Beach. So we give, and we also serve. Because what they tell us is, hey, we need people to come help. We need people to come do projects. We need people to help with yard work. We need people to come do some painting. We need people to come do some sorting. All these things that kind of overwhelm these nonprofit organizations. We say, absolutely, we can provide the manpower. And you have probably been a part of some of those love weekends. Some of those experiences we have, that's where you got your t-shirt, you went to an organization, and you served. We've been doing those love weekends and love weeks for years. And actually, in the last 12 months, we've kind of pivoted a little bit, and you may have noticed it, and I want to explain why we pivoted. We used to do these big love weekends, and we'd try to get every organization on board, and we'd have stuff going on all the weekends, and what we kind of discovered after a few years was that those weekends were for us. See, as a church, we were trying to get a big weekend out of it. And so we'd ask all our organizations, hey, what can we do this weekend? And I'll confess, sometimes they didn't have anything for us to do. But we needed the project. And so we'd end up kind of figuring something out. And so after a few years of doing that, you know, Eric and I sat down, and Eric was really one who was like, hey, I don't think this is kind of counter of our mission. You know, we say our mission is how can we help? And yet we're putting this need on them to provide us with this great experience on these weekends. And so we really don't do love weekends anymore like we used to. Our goal now is to have a serving opportunity a month. But what we do is we now put it back in the hands of the organizations. Rather than going to them and say, hey, we really need you to have something for the third week of December, we just say, hey, what do you need? And when would it be most convenient for us to come help you? And so that's why maybe you notice it's a slight pivot, but it's really helped us more serve our nonprofits, and it's made it much easier on them. And so that's kind of why we've started doing that, because we discovered, hey, this is actually better for them than the way we're doing it. And so we give, we serve, because we believe that that is the best way we can love our community. And we talked last week that Jesus is passionate about us loving our community. The last command he gave his disciples right before he was arrested was, hey guys, love each other. As I have loved you, I want you to love each other. Because that is what's going to prove to the world that you're my followers. And what we talked about last week, and we kind of wrapped up with, and where we're going to pick up today, is the reason this matters is because as Christ followers, those of us that consider ourselves Christians, we have a job to do. Once we become Christians, Jesus invites us to partner with him to reach other people. And the reason he cares so much about how we show love to others is because Jesus understands something fundamental about our faith, and it's this. Beliefs change us. We talked about this last week. The gift of Jesus is that if we believe in him, we get new life. All we have to do is believe. All we have to do is have faith. There's no performance requirement. There's no behavioral requirement. There's no checklist for entry. It is by faith that we are saved. And that's glorious because those beliefs, that's what changes us. But behaviors matter because behaviors are what change the world. It's how we as Christians behave in light of our beliefs that invites a world that doesn't believe what we believe to consider placing their faith in a man that died and came back to life. And so that's why for us as a church, love and be is so vital, because it is the way in which we allow our behaviors to broadcast our beliefs. And so we're passionate about this. We talk about it every single year. And the reason reason I'm so passionate about it is because I know that it works. And the reason I know it works is because it worked before. Now, if you've attended Wellspring for a while, you probably know where I'm going, because I talk about this probably once a year because I am just so enamored with the early church. I'm so enamored with the church basically from the moment Jesus dies and comes back to life and he ascends into heaven and he leaves, at best we think about 120 to 200 followers. That's the size of the movement Jesus created when he was alive. About 150 to 200 people max. There's probably more people in this room than Jesus had as a follower when he ascended into heaven. Jesus never traveled outside of his local home region, except when he was a very, very young baby, when his parents had to flee government persecution and go to Egypt. In his adult 3-year ministry, he never traveled outside of his home region. And as best we can tell, he never wrote anything down. Not once. Wrote nothing down. Yet, the movement he started changed the world. Literally, it changed the way we tell time. We literally took history and we divided it on his birth. They were off by a few years, but it's okay. We know now that Jesus was probably born around 3 or 4 BC, but they were close. But that's what BC means, before Christ. AD, year of our Lord. He literally divided history. And the reason is because within a few hundred years of his death, Christianity had dominated the known world. And I don't mean dominated by force. I mean everywhere you went, people were Christians. In the Roman world, by around 300 to 320 AD, the vast majority of people had become Christians. So much so that the emperor at the time, an emperor named Constantine, who was a politician, thought it prudent to convert to Christianity. Now, I wasn't there. I don't know if Constantine's conversion was real or not. I hope it was. But I also know it was very advantageous for him to declare Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute. In the span of 300 years, the empire that killed Jesus, 300 years later, decided it was to their advantage to make his worship the official religion of their government. 300 years. They killed him. 300 years later, they worship him. How does that happen? It's actually a question historians have asked for a long time, because historians have to look at it and they take God out of it. You know, we would say, well, God was moving and the Holy Spirit moved, but But historians and sociologists have really, they've dug into this and they've studied it. And they really think they've come up with some pretty compelling answers for what it was about Christians, specifically those first Christians, that caused so many people to become Christians. And here's what they've discovered. It wasn't their beliefs. It wasn't their beliefs that people found compelling, because they believed some weird things. They believed a man died and came back to life. They believed when they gathered together, they were to eat his body and drink his blood. Yeah, we have a context for that now called communion. 100 years after his death and resurrection, they had no context for that. So it wasn't their beliefs. It was the behaviors of early Christians that changed the world. Specifically, as best we can tell, we know there were two, but there may have been three major plagues in the first 100 to 200 years after Jesus ascended into heaven. And those plagues were dangerous. In some cases, they were deadly. And the vast majority of Roman citizens at the time either had no religious background at all, or they worshipped the Roman gods. Now, if you ever studied Greek mythology or Roman mythology when you were in school, you know that those gods basically looked as humans as playthings. There was no love there. There was no joy. And so any person with any sort of understanding of that system of gods, when the plagues came, well, the gods probably sent it. And if you got sick, you probably deserved it. And if you died, then no one knew what would happen. And so the vast majority of the citizens at this time in Rome were horrified of death, because they didn't know what was going to happen, and they thought the gods were out to get them. And so any person with means, the second these plagues started spreading, left town. They fled to the countryside. Rich people, the priests, everyone fled. And if you got sick, if you were friend, if you were family, if you got sick, it meant the gods wanted you to get sick, you did something wrong, and they abandoned them in the streets, and they left. In droves. This was the way you handled plagues in the Roman Empire. And what sociologists have discovered is there was one group of people that didn't leave the towns, the Christians. Most of them were too poor to leave the towns. They couldn't afford to. But also, they did not have this same fear of death, because they had a hope in their Savior, that they were going to spend eternity with him. So death didn't mean the same thing to them. So they stayed in the cities. They stayed in the towns. They stayed in the public square. And they took care of their friends and they took care of their family. And as it turns out, the plagues weren't as dangerous as everyone thought. And with a little care and with a little nursing, you could actually nurse people back to health. And so the Christians stayed in the towns and they took care of their people. They took care of their friends. They took care of their family. But they did something else. They went beyond their friends. They went beyond their family. They cared for the people that were left behind by everyone that fled. They cared for the people that had been abandoned by their friends. They cared for the people that had been abandoned by their families. They cared for them because in their heart, this is what Jesus told us to do. So these people are hurting, so of course we're going to care for them. And they care for them and they nurse them back to health. And eventually, when these people were nursed back to health, they looked at the Christians and they just said, You helped me. The Christians were like, well, of course we helped you. And they say, why on earth would you have helped me? And the Christians say, well, it's simple. See, we believe in this guy. His name's Jesus. And see, we think he came to earth to set us free from sin. And he died and he came back to life. And because of him, we know we're going to have eternity with him. And he tells us we're supposed to love everybody. And so we are. Would you like to hear more about Jesus? And you know what every single person said at that moment? Yes, I would. Tell me more about your beliefs, because your behaviors have blown me away. And within 300 years, Christianity was so popular. Christianity had taken such hold that the political leader at the time becomes a Christian to gain
popularity. Simply because they behaved in a manner that was consistent with their beliefs. And it worked. Because eventually Constantine dies, and a few emperors later, a guy named Julian, Emperor Julian, takes over. And he's not a Christian. He's not real big on Christians. He's real big on the Roman gods. And he just thinks, you know what? This is ridiculous. I'm done with this Christianity stuff. I don't believe him anyway. No one's that nice. Hey, let's go back, Rome. Let's go back to the old ways. Let's go back to the good old days. And he starts building pagan temples. And he starts inviting people to come to the pagan temples. And here's what he discovers. No one will leave Christianity. And he can't figure out why. And we know this is true because we have a fragment of one of the letters he wrote to one of his officials, lamenting the fact that he couldn't convince people to leave Christianity, that he couldn't convince people to turn their back on that faith and to go back to the ways and to the gods that Rome had been founded on. And here's what he says in his letter. He says, recent Christian growth is caused by their moral character. I love this. Even if pretended, and by their benevolence towards strangers. Here's what he's saying. He's like, hey guys, nobody actually loves their wife this much. Nobody loves their kids this much. Nobody's this kind to strangers. These people are pretending, but it doesn't matter. It's working. Their moral character is working. People can't get enough of Christians. Everything we're throwing at them, they're not willing to walk away from it because of what they're experiencing with those people that worship that man that died and came back to life. And he says, here's the crazy thing about the Christians. They're not just helping their friends. They're not just helping their family members. They show, what does he say, benevolence towards strangers. And he picks up right there and he keeps going. He says, he's trying to figure out what's going on. I think that when the poor happened to be neglected and overlooked by us, by our priests, when we did nothing for the poor, when we didn't care for the poor, when we acted like they don't matter, I think what happened is that the impious Galileans observed this and devoted themselves to benevolence. He's saying, those dirty Christians, they saw a need and they met it. Here's what he's saying. He's talking to his government official and he's saying, how can we compete with that? And Wellspring, that is exactly the point. When Jesus' church behaves like Jesus, nothing can compete with it. There is absolutely no stopping it. And that's why we spend a few weeks every year talking about the importance of loving Myrtle Beach, of behaving in a way that is consistent with what we say we believe. And again, you may ask the question, okay, I get it. But does it really work? Does it work? Yeah, it worked one time. I get it worked for the early church. How do we know it's going to continue working? Why is it so crucial that we do this? I know you're going to ask that question. And Jesus knew you were going to ask that question, which is why the last sermon he ever preached. He preached this sermon the week, like on Monday or Tuesday. Thursday he has dinner. Thursday night he's arrested. Friday morning he's convicted. Friday afternoon he's killed. Monday or Tuesday, last sermon we have recorded for us in the book of Matthew. Matthew 25, Jesus is teaching. And it says, if he was like, you know what? I gotta set the stage for this. I've gotta create some guideposts. I've gotta give them an end goal. I've gotta show them what's gonna happen at the end so that for the next thousands of years, no one's ever gonna be able to say, does it really matter? And so that's exactly what he does. In the book of Matthew, starting in chapter 25, he begins teaching. And around verse 30, 31, he starts teaching about the end. He takes us all the way to the end of the world. One, to remind us, those of us that consider ourselves Christians, that he's in charge, there's going to be an end, and he wins. and two, to point out what's going to make the difference along the way. And so if you have your Bibles, open them to Matthew 25. If not, it's going to be up here. But here's how Jesus begins kind of this part of his teaching. He says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory. Now, Son of Man was an allusion to an Old Testament prophecy that predicted the coming of the Messiah. Jesus often called himself the Son of Man. So if you ever hear people say, sometimes people like to get on television and like to pretend like they're really smart and sound really smart, and they say, Jesus never thought of himself as God. Jesus just thought he was a man. They added the God part later. Jesus didn't think he was God. Yes, he did. That's why he called himself the Son of Man. He was saying, I'm the guy you've heard about. And he's saying, when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit upon his glorious throne. He is painting a picture of the end of the world, of the day you've heard of as Judgment Day, when he will sit on a throne and declare once for all time, we win. That is the picture he's painting here. And he keeps going and he says, all the nations will be gathered in his presence. And he will separate the people as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. The entire world will be there. Jesus will be in charge. Now, we literally won't be sheep and goats. This is obviously a metaphor. He was speaking to his audience. Many of them were farmers. They went home at the end of each night and they had to separate the sheep from the goats. It was a common thing, and so he was giving them a picture they could understand. The takeaway for us is everyone will be there. We're going to be sorted into two groups, and Jesus is the one doing the sorting. He is the decider of who goes this way and who goes this way. Sheep's on the right, goats on the left. And here's what he says to those on the right, those who have chosen to place their faith in him. He says, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you are blessed by my Father. Come inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. And he's saying a lot of things here. He's saying, you can trust me now because I'm preparing for later. You can trust me now because I'm in charge for later. Later's not an accident. You're not an accident. None of this is an accident. I've been in charge the whole time. And I'm inviting you in to believe in me so that you can inherit the kingdom. He did not say work for the kingdom. He did not say earn the kingdom. He said inherit the kingdom. You inherit something by existing. And when we place our faith in him, we become sons, we become daughters of the king. And so that inheritance is for us. It is free. It is because of our faith. And so what he's saying is, hey, your faith is not in vain. Your hope is not in vain. Trust me in good times. Trust me in dark times. Trust me in good seasons. Trust me in bad seasons. You can trust me because I've seen the end. We win. And there is an inheritance waiting for you. And you will be blessed by it. It's something I've been preparing since the beginning. That's the promise of what awaits Christians. And so he says, come, receive your inheritance. And then, he begins to give them compliments. He begins to praise them, not for their beliefs. They got the kingdom because of their beliefs. But he begins to celebrate their behaviors. Here's what he says. He says, for I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty, you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. See, Jesus begins to walk through basically the totality of human need. And he's saying, anytime I was in need, church, anytime I was in need, believers in me, you were there for me. He says, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I had physical needs, you met them. When I was thirsty, you met them. When I was a stranger. See, 2,000 years ago, it was not easy to be a stranger in a new town. A traveler, mind you. There were no hotels. Basically, a stranger would come to a new town, and if he found someone willing to be hospitable, he could stay with them. Or if not, they spent the night in the square. And some scholars argue that this is talking about a very specific type of stranger. Not just a stranger to these people, but a foreign stranger, a refugee, if you will. It's possible Jesus was referring to himself, as I mentioned earlier. Jesus was a refugee. When Jesus was born, the ruler of the time found out that a new king of the Jews had been born, and so he ordered the death of every Jewish son, every Jewish male under the age of 2. An angel appeared to Jesus, appeared to Joseph and Mary and said, you got to get out of town. And so they fled. They fled government persecution. They went to Egypt. They stayed there for a few years. An angel finally said, hey, it's safe to go back, and he went back. And so Jesus is pointing out the hospitality and the compassion shown to people who find themselves in struggle through no cause of their own. And he's saying, when I was a stranger, you showed me hospitality. He says, when I was naked, you gave me clothing. When I was poor, when I didn't have what I needed, you provided it. When I was sick, he says, you cared for me. That doesn't necessarily mean that they were doctors. He means you showed compassion. You showed empathy. You spoke into me. You visited me. You cared for me. And specifically, even you visited me in prison. When I was in prison, you even cared for me. Now, prisons today aren't great places. 2,000 years ago, they were nightmares. People didn't go visit people in prison because if you were in prison, you had done something bad and wrong and you deserved it. And so to visit someone in prison was to show the ultimate compassion. It was to show the ultimate empathy. It was to show the ultimate, hey, I want to help and I want to care for you and I want to bless you. And so Jesus just says, hey, thank you guys. Thank you for doing all those things that you did. Now, I want to remind you, Jesus is telling this story about the end of time, which means when this actually happens, those of us that consider ourselves Christians are going to be in the crowd. And he's going to be talking to us. And he's going to say, thank you. And if you're like me, you're going to say the obvious question. That's cool, Jesus. I don't remember feeding you. Trust me, I would remember if I had fed Jesus. I would remember if I had visited Jesus in prison. And Jesus acknowledges that. And here's what he says. He says, then the righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or a stranger and show you hospitality? Or naked and give you clothing? When? When, Jesus? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you? What are you talking about? When did we ever do this? We don't remember. When did we serve you? Because we would have liked to have known that. And then Jesus says something absolutely remarkable, and my prayer is that it's life-changing. Because here's what he says. The king will say, I tell you the truth. When you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me. Don't miss what Jesus is teaching us. When we serve, when we love, when we give, when we care for anyone in the name of Jesus, it is as if we are caring for him. It is as if we are serving him. Because he knows that care furthers his kingdom. Because he knows that care invites others to believe. And so that's why he uses the phrase, least of these. See, Jesus knows the entire ball game hinges on whether or not we get what he's trying to teach in this moment. He knows it's the whole ball game as to whether our faith is going to stand up or fall away against every other faith who claims we have the one true God, we know the answers. He's saying, no, this is the differentiator. This is it. It's your behaviors. It's how he put it into action. And it's not just your behaviors. It's going to come down to one thing. That's what Jesus is trying to say. It's going to come down to this: how we treat the least. Not the least important. Listen to me. How we treat those least able to pay us back. How we treat those least able to give us a benefit for our help. Because here's the thing. Everybody can help a friend. Everybody can help someone who can pay them back. Everyone can help someone when they can see the benefit on the other side of, oh, I'm probably going to get a new job out of this. Oh, I'm probably going to get a promotion out of this. Anyone can do that. Everyone can do that. What Jesus is saying is, no. That's not what we're going to be measured by. We're going to be measured by how we treat those least able to do anything back to us. How we treat those least able to help themselves, those least able to say thank you, those least able to return the favor. How we treat the least matters. In fact, it's going to reveal something. What's it going to reveal? How we treat the least reveals who we value the most. It does. Because only someone who knows their hope is secured in an eternal God can spend their life pouring out in service of people who can't pay them back. And that, Wellspring, is what the early church did. They poured out for people who couldn't pay them back. And they changed the world. I believe my God's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so I'm just crazy enough to believe if we do what he's calling us to do, we can see what he's produced before. Because here's what Jesus is revealing, and here's what the early church got. And here's why we spend so much time talking about this. It's because at the end of the day, when it comes to a world and we want to share the hope we have, there's a mechanism, there's a roadmap God's given us to share that help. To share that hope. And it's this, it's help. See, our help validates our hope. And until we help, no one wants our hope because they don't feel it. They've never experienced it. Because our beliefs don't matter to people who need hope. Behaviors matter to people who need hope. And it's our help that validates our hope. It's what we do for the least that reveals who we love the most. And that's why, as a church, that's why we love MB. That's why we give. That's why we serve. Because we know it's the way we show love. And each week we're going to highlight one of our partners. And today we want to highlight one of our oldest partners. We've been working with New Directions now for a long time, pretty much since they opened their doors. And if you don't know New Directions, they serve the homeless population here in Horry County. They serve men, women, children, families. And they do an amazing job. And many of you have served through the years at New Directions. And I want you to know your help has given them hope. And so as we wrap up today, before we give, we wanted you to hear a story from New Directions, to hear from one of the directors, just about the help we've already provided, the help you've already provided. And just as last week, the hope is that the encouragement spurs us on to more. It spurs us on to more generosity, to more sacrifice, to more stepping into the gaps, to more serving the least. Because we know how we treat the least reveals who we value the most. Check this out.
My name is Brenda Ryan. I am the Operations Director for New Directions of Horry County. It is my passion to talk about all that New Directions does. We take care of the homeless men, women, and families in our community. We have a shelter for each of them. So a little over 7 years ago, New Directions was a relatively new agency. We got a phone call from Eric, and he said he wanted to come and speak with Kathy and me about doing some things in the community that could show their support and love for the people in Myrtle Beach. And we all sat down and we started talking about homelessness and how they could help us. And at that point, we, like I said, we were relatively new and we were not doing as many things as we are now, but they told us their mission and their goal. They set up their first Love Weekend with us. We have done or been the recipients of Love Weekend 3 or 4 times a year. And there are some amazing projects that Wellspring has done for us. Everything from yard maintenance, cutting down and chopping up a tree, to painting the hallways in the men's shelter, to building us a fabulous courtyard at our men's shelter. And what you guys have done for us over the last 7 years is just absolutely amazing. And so we are just forever grateful for this partnership. And we absolutely could not be doing what we do without this Love Weekend. As Operations Director, I also serve as Volunteer Coordinator for New Directions. And it's something I am extremely passionate about. I love working with people in the community and placing them, doing things that they're passionate about and things that we need. And what we do at New Directions, there's absolutely no way that we could do all that we do and help all the people without the volunteers in our community that come in to help us. So last year, we had over 40 groups and over 269 people who had came in to volunteer. And for, on the financial end, it translates as over $138,000 for last year that the 6,282 hours of volunteer work was done. So financially, it is extremely helpful for us, and getting things done, not just in our kitchen, but every single shelter that we have, volunteers help us inside and out of the shelters, and we couldn't do it without them. Wellspring not only helps us the specific times of year for Love Weekend, you guys are available to us all year long. And what a relief, especially as Director of Operations, that is for me to know that there is help and support out there when maybe the, you know, when we really need it. So for example, the grass cutting and the lawn maintenance was something that has just been, just was very difficult for us to find someone to do on a bi-weekly basis, and it's a lot of work. So reached out to Eric, and Wellspring has covered for an entire year maintenance, yard maintenance at all of our shelters. So we are just very grateful for that. So if there's something that we need in one of our shelters or one of our apartments, transitional apartments, I can call him up and just say, hey, we have a need for a dryer, and you know, they've been out of a dryer for a couple of weeks and not sure, you know, what we can do about it. And he says, okay, when would you like, you know, we'll pay for it, you have it delivered. And I'm like, wow. So anyways, it's really exciting. You guys have done so much more than that for us. I mean, you have helped us in the women's shelter with the supplies that they need, and the family shelter with supplies and things that they need, in the men's shelter just continuously. In the spirit of giving and Thanksgiving coming up, it's exciting to talk about how people can give and donate, especially to projects or churches that are really being the hands and feet of Jesus in our community, because it makes such a difference. So if I was sitting with somebody and wanted to, you know, share with them what I thought, I would absolutely encourage them to give to Love MB. There is the opportunities that they have to use the money on helping people are absolutely endless. And with that, I may even ask somebody to go on a tour with me of our facilities to show them specifically what Love MB has done. And those are the material things. It's really difficult to describe what it's done for the clients who live in our shelters, and especially the staff, because everything that is done in our shelters or in one of our facilities helps the staff to be able to do their job better. And our job is to help the homeless. And that is something that New Directions does very well. So if you're at all considering whether or not Love MB is a project or a cause that you would like to donate because it is worthy, I'm here to share with you that absolutely it does make a difference and it helps so many people in our community.